The notion of a cradle of humankind, a more politically correct replacement for the cradle of mankind, has a nice sort of appeal in the world of popular archaeology. It derives from Charles Darwin's prediction that Africa would prove to be the cradle, that place where our species was nurtured by Mother Nature. My own impression of Africa is that it is so fecund and has been for so long, it teems with life even today when the wildlife has been decimated. It is almost as though the chances were that it would throw up some amazing creature. But the cradle is a bit sentimental, given the reality that our remotest ancestors must have faced a physically very tough, often violent, disease-prone struggle to survive. But no doubt there were sweeter times and cradles even back in the trees where they might have learned a trick or two from the birds. The notion has an appeal that in places even attracts tourism. In my study, one can see that I am an unashamed enthusiast for these places. There are more than a few of them, especially in Africa. Ethiopia, Kenya, Tanzania, South Africa all have sites that claim the title, but also some in Asia, Indonesia and China, and India is looking for a breakthrough discovery. I've always found the study of human evolution very interesting. I don't know what percentage of the world's population know of this or accept it. Of course, there are many who reject it on religious grounds, but even secular critics have attacked Darwin. I think it is the great story to come from science. But not only is the story big, but so is the story of how it came to be written. It is also interesting how both stories manifest themselves in the popular culture. Every capital in Africa I saw has a museum with an account of the story. So do most science museums anywhere in the world. You can collect kitsch souvenirs from them. We'll be hearing a lot about Darwin in 2009, but the story of how the story has been unearthed is itself another long-running drama, coming slowly and somewhat painfully since the late 19th century. Look at the lives of Eugène Dubois, discoverer of Java Man, of the Leakey family in Africa, and other great contributors. There are some interesting books about it. I'll just mention, for example, The Discovery of the Hobbit by Mike Morwood and Penny van Osterzee, which includes an account of Dubois' life. Ancestral Passions by Virginia Morell is about the Leakeys, and Richard Leakey's own book, Origins Reconsidered, In Search of What Makes Us Human. Even though a properly objective scientific attitude or worldview does not allow us to think that humans have any special importance, nevertheless, the story that emerges from archaeology is still an enthralling drama. I find it hard to accept that it has all been some sort of fluke, a mere chance series of events. Even when we consider that the asteroid that wiped out the dinosaurs would have missed the Earth if it had arrived 20 minutes earlier or later. As anyone who has studied science and mathematics can affirm, it is always important to understand initial conditions. They are at least as important as the dynamics that follow on in any system. What were ours, our initial conditions? Was it Arcadia or hell on Earth? We don't really know what they were. Life is of quite uncertain origin so far, and so is the moment when our ancestors went a different way to those of the chimps. But one of the first things we have to get our minds around here is the immense age of the Earth. I've looked at this before in other programs about geology things. For example, the writings of John McPhee, who coined the term deep time. As Bill Compston's work proves with scientific rigour, there's a good 4 billion years for life to evolve, and not just for the age of the Earth, but the Earth-Moon system too. Think of the tides coming and going twice a day, every day, for all the eons of time when so much of the evolution of life was taking place in the littoral between the high and low tide marks. The plants adapting to standing out of the water, the animals crawling out and learning to breathe the air. It's plenty of time for the thousands of generations to establish any species. I wouldn't be surprised if one day we can kick-start this process by beaming signals at complex minerals on distant planets, preparing them for settlement by humans who, as usual, arrive very late in the process. We all know the sort of analogies about how it happened on Earth. If the age of the Earth was the length of your arm, human history is like a single scrape of a nail file off your finger. If the age of the Earth is viewed as a single day, humans appear only in the last moments before midnight, and so on. It's strange how many people seem to be under the impression our ancestors knew dinosaurs. But time is not the only thing that is important. In fact, sheer duration is relatively less important than other things like morphology and behaviour. These things come, given enough time, and when they do, they move to centre stage. In my novel, The Expedition, the second part of the book is an attempt to dramatise the story of human evolution through the perceptions of a group of characters who, as it were, emerge in the course of the story in a series of steps. The first chapter of this section starts with a violent undersea birth and ends when two apes, mimicking the cranes on the open plains of Africa, stand up to dance in front of their gathered kin. This is a very long time span. It includes the move from water to land and the end of the dinosaurs. The next chapter ends with the first self-referential sentence being spoken. A character speaks her name. Both of these steps take place in the cradle. In the cradle we have the lullaby. Its gentle rhythms emulate the rise and fall of the wind and the swaying of the tree branches where mothers learnt to sing to an audience of one. Early speech followed the natural rise and fall of the breath. The first half-spoken words were crooned to babies, who then grew to talk. The next chapter of the book ends with the first sea voyage, and so on. The time duration between each of these major steps is at least an order of magnitude less each time. I believe none of this was a fluke, because even from long before they got up to dance, they were trying it on these characters, our ancestors, and they kept doing that all the way through the many stages of our evolution until the tribes came out of the deserts and founded cities. Then things changed, of course, but trying it on hasn't stopped. The expedition must always press forward.